I'm going to attempt to do it here. There's a couple points in particular that need rebuttal, and I also want to reserve as much time as I think and anticipate that I'm going to need forward after counsel is finished with this case. So moving then immediately to page one of the brief in question, the issue concerns that of the extent to which the affirmative defense of race judicata is available to the appellee in this action. Essentially, they failed to plead race judicata as an affirmative defense. In their operative pleading in this case, they argued race judicata should be applied in their brief and that the case should be dismissed upon the basis of the principle of race judicata. We responded to that by way of pointing out that race judicata being an affirmative defense does in fact have to be pleaded, and in addition to that, the fact that the bill of exceptions, the transcript, and the pleadings were not in front of this court. Now, moving at this point then to the bottom of page one, I'm going to quote from the reply brief at this point. Quote, however, Central asserted the defenses of failure to state a claim and a lack of subject matter jurisdiction in its answer and affirmative defenses, arguing to the district court that appellants had failed to state a claim and that the court lacked subject matter jurisdiction because of race judicata principles, end quote. Several points to be made about that quotation mark. Apparently what they're attempting to do at this point by bringing up the failure to state a claim and the failure and that the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction is to somehow bootstrap the race judicata argument that they have at this point that it should be applicable on those other two claims. I don't quite understand that, but I can't come up with any other explanations to why they would have that in there. I do note the inconsistency between that particular argument, if that's what it is, from the aspect that in order for an affirmative defense to have any application at all, it presupposes the existence of a complete and valid cause of action. And of course, if you're claiming that the complaint fails to state a cause of action, you're being inconsistent there. Now, for purposes of completeness, we know that we can plead all three of them together. We're past the pleading stage here. There's just nothing that avails the appellee in this particular case to have the principle of race judicata applied. Therefore, to turn this back to the district court and have them dismiss it on that basis because they didn't plead it. And in addition to that, they say, arguing to the district court that, apparently the point behind that is that, as we know, the district court cannot be guilty of committing error with respect to an issue unless that issue has been brought to the district court's attention. Well, they're saying that they argued this to the district court. The only problem with that is there's no citation to record anywhere that they did that. As far as I know, I don't know that they did that. They argued that at all. There's no citation to the record on it.
And certainly the issue wasn't addressed by the district court.
It was not addressed by the district court. So sub silencio, if I may, it was overruled, if you could even consider it having gotten that far. They cite the Dakota titled case, which essentially stands for the proposition that race judicata can be raised sui sponte by the appellate court. That's true. I would submit to this court that the facts and the argument that are set forth in the Dakota titled case just simply don't apply to this particular case. And then they also provide in this particular section, Central requests this court to take judicial notice of the transcript, bill of exceptions, and all the pleadings and filings in what they call Jeffrey 6. That was the previous case. Certainly this court would have access, presumably, to the transcript and the pleadings. I don't know that you would with the bill of exceptions. I don't even know if the bill of exceptions exists today, given the lapse of time. The last sentence that they have in this particular section, appellants failed to refute Central's race judicata analysis. This is the refutation. If the court were to look back at that case, the court would see that the claims and defenses in that case are based primarily, if not exclusively, on a single letter, a 13-page letter from November of 2006 from the general manager of Central Nebraska Public Power to the president of Jeffrey Lake Development Incorporated, in which nearly every lot on Jeffrey Lake is cited for being in violation of Central's lease. Most of those lots have multiple violations such that the sum of all of them runs into several hundred. There are approximately 9 different categories of alleged violation in that letter. 3 of those categories deal with an elevation issue, and those 3 categories are worded thusly: a residence is located below 2764 without the permission or consent of Central. A building is located below elevation 2764 without the permission or consent of Central. A boathouse is located below elevation 2764 without the permission or consent of Central. We can ignore the boathouse. The boathouse is a lake water use related facility and improvement, and that's simply not an issue in this case. But the other two are. Notice that I say explicitly, but if it doesn't rise that high by necessary implication, you can have those improvements below that elevation. It's just qualified. It's just conditional. In contrast to this particular lawsuit, which Central has asserted throughout and continues to assert throughout, that those types of improvements, no portion of which can be below elevation 2764, it's an absolute prohibition that they are alleging. No waiver, no adjustment, no variance, no nothing. And incidentally, those violations that they allege in that November letter have appeared in dozens of documents that are related to this case, most of which are in this particular record. And of particular significance is that Central actually has filed a report with FERC that has all those kinds of violations on it. So FERC is aware of that.
Counsel, can I just stop you for a minute? Because my understanding of the lease agreements in this case is that none of the parties asserted that they were ambiguous.
Asserted what?
That they were ambiguous. Nobody's asserting that the leases are ambiguous.
That's correct.
So we don't really get to that extrinsic evidence.
We don't get to what?
The extrinsic evidence. We look at the language of the lease. And can you point to me what provision in the lease allows buildings or structures to be below that elevation?
The paragraph 13, which at least in the Jeffrey lease has the word generally, which has to mean something in the way that it need not be completely above elevation 2764. But more particularly than that, paragraphs 14, 15, and 16, which have specific provisions that can only be applicable and only have any significance to that particular lease, if these kinds of structures can be allowed below that. To respond to Your Honor's observation about the extrinsic evidence, many of these exhibits are in the record to show course of performance. We went 30 years under this lease, and we never had a problem. We never had this interpretation. All of a sudden, now we do. And those exhibits are to show that Central, until approximately 2010, interpreted and applied the lease the same way we did.
But I think that the purpose of the question is, if the lease is not ambiguous, course of conduct evidence is extrinsic evidence, which is not considered. We look at the terms of the lease, not how the parties performed it over the last 30 years.
There's law generally on that. I think there's a citation or two, which is contrary to that, but I don't have it. I can't respond to the court in terms of conceding that. I'm aware of the law generally in that regard. The next section I'm going to skip because they don't add anything to this, and I'm short of time here. Same way with the paragraph in which they're saying if the word generally ought to be put out in the first part of the sentence. I made reference to the fact in my brief that I thought that was absurd, and I state it again. I think that it is. We get over to the last section, and they say that they rely on the regulations. They say the issues turn on the language of such regulations, including the lease agreements. Take note that the lease agreements in this particular construction are secondary. The regulations are primary. The lease agreements are secondary. You can look throughout their entire brief on the citations and the descriptions they have of the regulations, and you won't find anything that is directly applicable to the issues in their case. In this case, there is such regulation. It's a single page, and I point it out to the court like this because it's the last page on my brief. It's appendix attachment B. It says that the lowest living elevations at Jeffrey Lake for your living room is 2762. That produces the anomalous situation that you can have a living room at Jeffrey Lake at elevation 2762, but you have to have a septic tank, the bottom of which has to be 2 feet higher than that. I'm out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is David Bargan. I represent the Central Nebraska Public Power and Irrigation District in this matter. Your Honors, this case is about appellants wanting to expand this court's decision in what the district court referred to as Jeffrey 6. In that case, to avoid contract obligations, this court said Jeffrey and Midway did have going forward under those lease agreements. In Jeffrey 6, this court held that Central could not declare a forfeiture of the lease agreements because of equitable estoppel. But in this case, the court held that Central could enforce those contract obligations as to all parties going forward. And that's what Central is trying to do in this case. It's not trying to declare a forfeiture or declare a breach. Some lessee came to Central with a permit application, frankly, even before the application was made, about a year prior, with questions as to where structures could be placed on his sublease that he had purchased. And Central gave its interpretation, gave its opinion about the lease agreement, and said all structures, by the plain language of the agreements, must be above elevation 2764. And Central is not enforcing the lease agreements out of malice or bad faith, as appellants continually assert in their briefs. We assert that Central is doing so out of obligation under its federal regulatory obligations and duties by FERC and its FERC license.
Well, Central does have a track record of trying to collect rents.
I will concede that there is a long history here of litigation. And part of the litigation involved Central wanting to collect rents on properties that at this point do not pay rent from an lease agreement. That was litigated, and the courts decided that that could not occur, and Central moved on. And so through all the years of this litigation, Central has been trying to, in fidelity with the court opinions, apply the lease agreements as they are constructed by the plain language, and as the courts have said they may or may not do. So in this case, again, in a nutshell, what this case really is Midway and Jeffrey are trying to take this court's opinion in Jeffrey 6, where the court declared by equitable estoppel that Central could not end the leases, and now we can't enforce them going forward either, which is in direct conflict with what this court said in Jeffrey 6.
Well, isn't the issue that you both have differing interpretations of the lease? They're not saying you can't enforce them. They're saying the lease under your interpretation is incorrect.
Their opinion certainly is that they have a different interpretation, but as we've asserted, the clear language, the plain language of the lease agreements, it is what it is. And so Central is trying to enforce it by the plain language. And if I could explain for just a moment, there's the issue in our cross appeal about the word general. And the language, of course, there's all kinds of law, and as you're well aware, contracts must be, if they're not ambiguous, must be read by their plain language. We don't look at extrinsic evidence. We don't get to course of performance. You must read all provisions together, make them harmonious. And so doing all of that together, reading 13 through 16, paragraphs 13 through 16 together, we get to the proposition that those agreements, at least the Jeffrey lease, says all improvements must be above elevation 2764. It says generally because there's an except clause. And I know appellant's brief chided us for saying that we should move the word generally around, and we're not trying to play a game. It's just that to understand the language, boat docks and water access facilities are actually a subset of cabins and related structures, because that paragraph says all cabins and related structures shall be generally above 2764, except, and so we're taking a piece of those structures out and saying except boat docks and water access facilities may be below them. So the word generally does not refer to the elevation provision. It refers to the fact that there's a subset coming up, and that subset is the boat docks and water access facilities.
Is that contrary to how we looked at that generally word in Jeffrey 6?
In Jeffrey 6, this court looked at that word in terms of material breach. And again, the context was, have the sublessees materially breached their obligations under the contract? And so this court said, well, first, look, the violations that were alleged, those elevations of those structures were pretty close, right? Within 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot. And then went on to say, and by the way, the word generally here means that for purposes of forfeiture, at least in the context of that case, it doesn't require absolute compliance. Again, the law abhors forfeiture of a contract. And so I submit what this court was looking to do in Jeffrey 6 was to avoid that forfeiture of a contract. And so that was the context of that case.
In that case, but didn't yes. use the word generally to get there? I mean, isn't that because we said that that defines that it doesn't have to, everything doesn't have to be above that level, generally?
The court did say that, but again, I submit, Judge Embody, that the reason the court said that was because it was finding a non-material breach. It was saying these breaches are not material because they're generally close. They're not exactly above, but they're close enough.
But you're saying that generally doesn't really refer to that. That's your position today.
Our position is the meaning of the word generally was not an issue in that case. It was not squarely an issue in that case. So in this case, I think it is a part of what's at issue, particularly the district court relied upon this court's decision in Jeffrey 6 and took that to mean that this court already had found a meaning for generally for purposes of this case and said that means close enough will work.
Doesn't it seem a little inconsistent for us to say, well, if we're addressing this issue, we're going to take this exact language and interpret it this way. But if we're addressing it on a different issue, we're going to take the exact same language and interpret it differently. Doesn't the language mean what the language means?
I submit the language means what it means. But again, I think that in that case, the meaning of that language was not clearly an issue in that case. And so I think we refer to it as dicta in our brief. I think it's because it followed on to the material breach issue. And this court's primary holding was that those violations were not a material breach. The court said, going forward, Central may enforce new and different violations. It's going to be extremely difficult for Central to figure out when permit applications come to it, what's close enough. Is it 2763, 2760, 2759? And I know that's a pragmatic and a practical aspect of the argument. But again, I think for purposes of enforcing going forward, what else can Central use but the clear language of the lease agreements? And so I think, to make it harmonious, to make the language read like it's written, the explanation I gave for why generally is there is the reason it's in the agreements. Again, the appellants have not alleged that the language is ambiguous, and as the court knows, that's a first step to getting to behind the language, like of course the performance or pictures, photographs of structures or whatever. It's just no one's alleged that. Appellants have admitted that they did not allege that there was ambiguity here. I want to turn now to our cross-appeal on just for a couple minutes. We did assert a res judicata argument, and we did argue that in briefing to the district court. There were no closing arguments at the trial. We did closing a briefs.
Well, we don't have a brief.
Fair enough, and the court does not have those. But it was argued. Yes, I assert that it is part of the district court's final decision, and we did assert and we did plead failure to state a claim and lack of subject matter jurisdiction. I think it raised you kind of applies those two defenses certainly are implicated in that defense. But clearly, when appellants are relying upon a lot of the same exhibits, a lot of the same arguments, Judge Castle's analysis of certain exhibits in this case, those issues could have been brought in the former case. They certainly could have been. They could have argued not just that that Central had was equitably stopped, but that there were no lease violations in the first place for all the reasons they state in this case. So again, we would assert that the district court should have dismissed the case based on res judicata, and we assert that the plain language of the lease agreements clearly says that Central may enforce the lease provisions as asserted. And even if this court does look at the course of performance, we submit that there's no evidence that shows that Central knowingly approved permit applications that did not follow that 2764 elevation restriction. Much of the evidence that they point to, as we say in our brief, were structures that are exempted from that elevation provision. They were boat docks, they were patios by boat docks, they were seawalls, or they were ECS, erosion control structures near the shoreline, things that help folks get to the water and access the water. So we think that simply there was no evidence on that point at the trial. There's no further questions? Thank you.
No questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Appellant was out of time, I believe.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Windrum and Mr. Vargan. You are excused and your case is submitted. Thank you for your appearance. This matter this afternoon is Wilson Dental versus Dental.